warmly welcome to this little discussion about Touko and Tom of England. And this little chat, very informal chat, will be one part of celebration of centenary of Touko. And I think we'll have a little chat between us. There's Kati Mustola, researcher, Stefan Kalmar, the curator of this exhibition, and Susanna Luoto, who is the representative of Tom of Finland Foundation in Finland. And we are going to chat about an hour or something like that, and after that, your questions, your comments, your arguments will be very, very welcome. And I'll start with Stefan. Would you explain something about these themes of this exhibition, this pleasure and joy, and how did you find the work of Tom of England?
I was introduced obviously I knew as a teenager growing up in a small town in Germany as a 14-year-old, I knew about Tom of England, and I thought I knew everything there is to know till a friend of mine, a painter in California, Richard Hawkins, introduced me to the work of the Tom of Finland Foundation, and I subsequently met Dirk Dehner, the president of the foundation in Los Angeles, and also knew that Tom was giving a lecture at CalArts, which is on view as part of the exhibition, and knew his role that he played for contemporary artists, Richard Hawkins, Mike Kelly, Raymond Pettibon, and had a certain perspective on Tom's work till I visited the foundation. And for example, one of the preconceptions that I had was that Tom of Finland was obviously American, that he obviously lived in Los Angeles, and that he was a kind of outsider artist, and that he was born somewhere in the 40s. So once I visited the foundation, all those preconceptions went out of the window, and I learned that he worked actually in Helsinki and did most of his work in Helsinki, that he chose till his death to live in Helsinki, even so he could have moved to California any given time. He never had a green card. That he worked for many years at Mekon Erickson. So he was actually very scholarly in terms of how to construct images, and that he was, during the daytime, involved in projecting the heteronormative, stereotypical family, while in the evening he so pretty much did the opposite, but yet employed the very knowledge that he gained through his advertising work in a subcultural mode of his cultural productions. So in a way, and biographically born in the 1920s, unlike maybe any other contemporary artist that I can think of, he paralyzed the history of gay culture as no other in the 20th century, from the repressive 50s, 60s till the liberation movement, 60s, 70s to the AIDS crisis. I think can't think of any other artist that paralleled that history as Tom did.
Yes. Yeah. And how about Susanna? Do you know Tom or do you know Touko Laaksonen? Which one is your study?
My specialty would be probably Touko, and it just occurred to me that I also had a kind of a misconception when I started exploring the letters that he wrote, hundreds, I'd say thousands of letters, to his very dear sisters back to Turku. And I took him for he's a gay erotic artist, and the interviews he had given, how he expressed himself, he was kind of a tough guy, a big, rough, short sentences. And then I found this most poetic, wonderful writer, and discovered yet another talent. at Touko Laaksonen, and I just can't like wonder how, you know, how many talents this man had for being a, you know, wonderful artist, professional musician, and also, I mean, he really writes well, and so the Tom like corrected me too in my preconception, and I think preconceptions sort of like label Tom of Finland, because we sort of hit just the surface while looking at his art, and he's so much more. So for the time being, that's on my behalf.
Kati, you know something about his studies. Was he ever studying in art school, or...?
There's a misconception of his studies, for instance, in the biography, which is also existing in Finnish, by Valentine F. Hooven, that says that Tom studied at Ateneum, the Finnish art high school here in Helsinki. But that's not true. He was totally self-learned as an artist. After the war, he studied music at the Sibelius Academy, composing and piano, and he almost finished his studies, but and that is something that most people do not know. And also we heard this beautiful song what he composed, that he was actually multi-talented, and at first wanted to become a professional musician. He wanted to become a concert pianist. But very typical for him, he was a perfectionist, what we see here on the walls. And because he could not, he realized that he cannot be one of the best concert pianists in the world. So then he quit. And he never took out his diploma from Sibelius Academy. But still 10 years after his studies, he earned his daily bread from music. It was only after that when he started in this advertisement company. And actually he had an education also in advertising marketing. And he had, before the war, started a letter course. He would have liked to go to Ateneum, but it was question of money, it was question of the insecurity of the artist career, so he thought that maybe if I go to this advertisement school, then I can get education in drawing. But he was totally disappointed with this Markkinointi Instituutti, the school exists still today, because that was marketing, and that was all the bureaucracy which was which surrounds advertising, but not the drawing. So in this sense, as an artist, he was self-learned. He never got any formal education in arts in that sense.
So what kind of Tom would you like to, what you would like us to see, or what kind of Tom would you like to introduce us to?
Because I mean, I think kind of there could be obviously many, many Toms. Yeah. And in the run-up to the exhibition, Kunsthalle was initially thinking of dropping the subtitle and saying Pleasure of Play, or we can just call it Tom of Finland. And I was like, no, you can certainly not. Because the notion of pleasure and play is, for me, some of the characteristics in Tom's work. And pleasure or joy is often employed as sort of threatening the normative order of relationships. Because, I mean, if you look through art history, you don't know many depictions of sexual acts where people are laughing or are looking joyful. it was always with that seriousness. So kind of that joy and that knowing smile in Tom's work is something very subversive and very something very liberating. And not without reason, for example, have you behind you is these four drawings of a prison scene. And, you know, like someone who is certainly a different generation than Tom of Finland and a different generation than Dirk Dehner, I was always interested, where does a uniform fetish and gay culture comes from, you know? And only through the study of Tom's work, I also realized, obviously, it's a real de facto discrimination of the depiction of the people that actually did put you in the 50s in prison. So the idea of literally fucking through the bars and with your enemy, in a sort of Jean Genet sense of like fucking the enemy as the most subversive act of power relationships, that is also something that is going through Tom's work, which I find interesting. And also the notion of an identity that is not stable, that is not given, but that is performed and reenacted in a postmodern sense constantly. So it's an invention, not a given. And that's like something that pre-Cindy Sherman, pre-gender studies, Tom has in a way introduced to gay culture.
Yes.
Would you like to say about yes, Tom? We talked about this other day that in these letters I read like Tom how he was when he was 20, when he was like 30, and you know, when we get older and we remember our youth or early days, we have a different vision. I mean, we forget things or we shape them up a bit differently. But it's wonderful to see how, as an artist, he was very emotional and looking for that sensation in art while doing art. Well, many of us have heard that. This is what he kept saying often, that he knew that the drawing was good if he had a hard on and if it made him masturbate. So, and very early on, the same, though not as explicitly put, but it was exactly the same way how he estimated if a musical piece was good, that he was after that wonderful feeling of throwing himself into that universe of music, for instance. In one letter he writes that to his sister, oh dear sister, I'm in love, I'm completely in love, but to whom? Oh, to music at least. So these are like this was his way to experience art, and no doubt would he then value also that if the drawing affected him all through his physical self, then he would know if it was good or bad.
How about Kati? How about Touko? Touko, as a part of Finnish gay history, I think that's one of your specialities. Is he very typical gay man in Finnish gay history, or is he a very non-conformative figure?
Well, I think in relationship to his family, where he was totally closeted, so the family didn't have a clue that they had a gay son and brother. And also his workmates, because he made his whole career then in advertisement. He was over 50 when he finally could live on his art. So the workmates never had a clue that he was gay. And that is very typical of the generation, and they had to be closeted because homosexuality was criminal in Finland until 71. So this generation had to live a double life. And as you probably read in Helsingin Sanomat that the family knew of his being gay and his being a well world renowned artist and a pornographer, that was all a shock, which was relieved when he died. So yes, in that sense he was very that is a very typical Finnish history of a Finnish gay man born in year 20. And also something what is very... 21. Oh, sorry. Sorry for that. So, also what is typical is that he had very, as Susanna has studied, very close connections to his sisters and parents as long as they lived. And in Finland, it's very typical, I think, in other countries too, that gay and lesbian people have the families tended to have a policy, things you don't talk about do not exist. So Tom went to Turku, he lived here in Helsinki with his life partner Veli Mäkinen, and they went to the relatives together, but Veli was also the companion, kaveri. And the whole family accepted this and never asked any questions, and so it was not an issue, so they didn't... The family didn't need to deal with the homophobia, and Tom didn't need to face the homophobia of the family. So there is this dinosaur in the ear, but nobody talks about it. So it doesn't exist. Yeah, that is very typical for gay history too. Since Vicky Wickman here was the personal assistant of Tom in his last years, so Vicky can really tell us the close and personal things of Tom, since we didn't know Tom in person.
He was my friend.
Tom was my friend. He was my grandfather, and he was my evening coffee buddy. Well, afternoon coffee buddy. Because after that I had to go and work at the gay bar. Well, it was just life. A wonderful life. Something for a heterosexual guy. Who could ever come as close to anything like this as me? I am really, I don't even know the name, not the word, but I couldn't have been a better life for me, because I learned to know Tom more than as a friend. He was like a brother from another mother. He was just Tom. Now I can't say anything more before I'm starting to cry. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky, thank you.
Yes, I what Kati was just saying previously, that also the like that people think that Tom then had to, well, he was actually, well, leading this double life, but yet how he coped with this double life, for instance, in letters. And it's amazing how he openly wrote about everything, but the subject matter of his drawings or what he was like working on never came about. So, and I've interpreted it the way that since this brother was working abroad, you know, already the fact that he was abroad, like working in Los Angeles, it was something so special. So they never, I mean, they never came to think about, like, it would be something, I mean, they were not even suspicious. There's not a single line in the letters that would, like, refer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that goes even a step further. I mean, that it takes till 2016 that a Finnish institution is doing this exhibition. I mean, it's also saying something about a homophobia, and that the exhibition has to be kind of imported via New York to come here. It's also very telling. And that none of the major institutions has any holdings or substantial holdings of Tom's work is also very telling, and that there is not a dedicated room to his work as a cultural icon globally is kind of, you know, bewildering or strange, to say the least.
We had 10 years ago, almost today, the first big exhibition in the HAM Helsinki City Art Museum on Tom, where we even published the book, the catalog of the, if you know this this book, the catalog of the. So there has been one exhibition before in this kind of institution since Tom's art career in art started. In the first exhibition was in the back room of a porno shop in Hamburg. So it is a long way to the galleries, but I totally agree with you that Finland should cherish and honor Tom much more, and there should be, like you said, that you visited Alvar Aalto Museum today. So where is the Tom of Finland Museum? Or at least the Tom of Finland room in our national gallery or Kiasma. So there's still a long way.
And another aspect that just reminded me of is what I found interesting and charming in a way is that Tom was never so much interested in other artists, but lots of other artists were very much interested in him. It's like when he had an exhibition opening in New York at Stompers, Warhol attended, I'm sure Fassbinder knew of his work, you know, like lots of people, I'm sure John Genet knew about his work, but vice versa, Tom wasn't that interested in other people's work, which is kind of, okay.
yes, I, on my behalf, I must say that I did already offer the idea of dedicating a room in one major Finnish museum to Tom. And not just for Tom's sake, but also for the sake of the revenues of the museum, because it's an odd thing that wherever you go abroad, you have to stand in line to get in the museums. But here, after the opening, a couple of days later, you can be the only visitor, you know. So, but anyway, so I was turned down. So I just think that Tom's works in one museum where one could go and see the most the best known of his works would allure people, those long sought after tourists and visitors to Helsinki.
Okay, if Dirk is not here, then I can mention this what I spoken about with you, Susanna, earlier. Let's try to get to Dirk a Pro Finlandia medal, because he would really be worth it. Because he has done so much for Finnish art and for Finland that it is it's incredible. We need to get him.
Yeah, this is Vicky is absolutely right. Somebody who dedicated himself to his arts and not for marketing himself, and thank God there was this Tomo Finland Foundation that Tom founded with Dirk Dehner, who unfortunately cannot be here because he got a horrible stomach flu, so he's been vomiting at home, so he's in Finland but couldn't attend now here. He was earlier here but not feeling well. But so Dirk Dehner has really worked on keeping up Tom's legacy, and it's mostly thanks to this Canadian man who's been living most of his life in America, and where also this Tom of Finland Foundation that Dirk and Tom together started in 1984 is still. So if you ever visit Los Angeles, check Tom of Finland Foundation's website so you can visit the house. That's also where Tom drew and worked.
Many people ask why the Tom of Finland Foundation is in America. Why not here? Why not in Europe? And that was also a question puzzled by Tom, because when he was seriously ill and old, he knew that, and he didn't want to leave he couldn't leave his artwork to his siveät sisaret, to his sisters, because they didn't have a clue, and they would have destroyed it all, most probably. In the interviews I have been reading, he had been thinking, and I also asked the Hamburg collection Tangerman of here are several works from the late Harald Tangerman, who was one of the first who organized the exhibitions in Hamburg of Tom. They had some talks about foundation or things like that, and also Tom had connections to Netherlands. Finland was still a sleeping beauty, so it was nobody here who would at least know Tom besides the small gay leather scene, and not even Seta was aware, and Seta was fighting for partnerships Seta was fighting for gays to become respectable members of the society, since we were very marginalized freaks, and these images would not have been the best postcards for gay marriage, and for the first thing they are not the married marrying type of guys. There are at least very seldom, and so Finland was not at that level, so it needed to be somewhere abroad, and it was Dirk Dehner, and it was in general in America. Tom could live out his gay side. He didn't need to be closeted. He was respected his art. Robert Mapplethorpe, all these big names in American art admired him, came to the openings of his exhibitions. He could speak freely. Well, Tom's work, it happened to Tom a couple of times the first exhibition in Hamburg included, that he gives his originals for the exhibition, and then afterwards the gallerist says, oh sorry, they disappeared. And I think that happened also in New York, in a gallery where Robert Mapplethorpe was a part, you probably know better this story, was partner, and Tom was very mad at him, but well, this is all, I don't remember it from the top of my head, but that is described in the book, in the new edition of Tom's biography, The Gay Hero by Valentine Hooven. That's probably Robert Mapplethorpe was not, was not to blame, but Tom thought that he was. Also, all these pictures, couple of decades later, pop up to the market. So it's very obvious that they were stolen from the exhibition, but nobody knows who stole them, and nobody has ever been charged for it. So this has happened. But what was I was talking about something else, but it, never mind. It comes up. Yes, so that he could... I was talking about how come Tom of Finland Foundation has his home base in Los Angeles. It was Dirk who noticed that this is an artist who first became friends with Tom and noticed this is an artist who doesn't have a clue about the and is not interested in the bureaucracy of art, so the copyrights and all kinds of that things, and doesn't get paid, and is one of the most pirated artists in the world, and doesn't get a single penny for his art. So somebody needs to start to look up of his rights, and so they started Tom of Finland company, who owns the rights for the works and can sell them and can get money from them, and also later they started the foundation. So we really should consider giving Pro Finlandia medal for Dirk, because he did this and there has been some controversies and misunderstandings between Finnish fans of Tom and Finnish scholars who have asked foundation for the copyrights to publish Tom's work, and Dirk has foundation, which is Dirk, has said that how much do you pay? And then it has been we don't pay anything, and they have not known how to negotiate with the foundation, and that the foundation is not so much after money, but more after that the copyrights are respected, and for academic work, where if you write an academic article, the writer doesn't get a penny, so you do not need to pay the foundation, but Dirk wants, of course, first ask if it's somebody who is commercially using Tom's work.
Yeah, well, in Los Angeles, the Tom of Finland House, there is every week a gathering for youth artists who want to draw naked pictures. And there is people who want to be as models, and there are people who want to be as artists and just join the family. And that is wonderful. I just hope that Finland would understand it one day, because we are so behind Sweden and Russia.
Also Russia, I doubt.
Yes, one comment to what Kati said, that also Dirk saw the I mean, not just the need, but the urgency of protecting Tom's work, because he was he had so many copycats already in Europe. There were people who were like, you know, drawing up sort of like Tom. There was even an artist called Tom of Findland. Somebody who had added the D in between was definitely some ignorant clown who couldn't even read or spell. But anyway, he drew Tom-like pictures and got paid for them. And the same continued in America, but in a very, very much larger scale. So that one printing house where Dirk took Tom, you know, to do some business printing deal, and the general manager, the owner of the company, was so happy to meet Tom because he had published these copies. I mean, not through Tom of Finland drawings, but the copies. And paid the education for two of his children, and everybody knows how expensive that is in America. So that how he was like really being robbed, and that's also like behind when the foundation today reacts strongly about that the credits are always respected and paid if needed.
Yeah, but I have a slightly different opinion about this, because it's kind of ironic that Tom actually copied his own works very early on. You can see some of them in the books here, where he makes photographs of his own drawings and then went to the local bars and clubs and distributed them freely to friends, and this way the work became more of a communicative tool and a vehicle to create a community, and was a tool for a community to identify itself and relate to each other through the drawings, rather than introduced, not coincidentally, I guess, by an American to protect copyrights. You know?
Yeah, but, well, then we enter the discussion. If, are you allowed yourself to copy yourself, or...
What I argue is that Tom never had a, you know, like, definite commercial interest in his work to the degree that he would copyright it, the work himself. You know, that of course he didn't want it to necessarily be exploited, but the purpose of the work when he traveled to Berlin early on was more like to show off, to pick up people, to, you know, like to get interest, as well as creating a community and a sort of underground hype around himself and his drawings, rather than say like, oh, there's a C in a corner and you can't copy it, otherwise I charge you $100 for it. I think it was far more libertarian, far more generous, and far more far more generous essentially than saying like, oh, you can't use my images, which also relates to that, which obviously also relates to the content and the excess of pleasure in the work itself. That it's a gift, and it was a gift economy rather than an economy that wanted to create profit.